From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been more than 2 weeks since Hurricane Florence made landfall in North Carolina. Dozens of people were killed during the relatively slow-moving disaster of relentless rain and record-breaking flooding in the region. The prevalence of massive hog farms and unlined coal ash pits were an environmental disaster waiting to happen. And with the rising waters of Hurricane Florence flooding those industrial waste sites, what will become of the air and water in affected parts of the state? Now that the TV cameras have left and FEMA is wrapping up its operations, we'll turn to an activist on the ground in North Carolina. Naima Muhammad is the organizing co-director of the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. Welcome to the program, Naima.
Thank you. Thanks. And I'm glad to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Can you tell me what your experience has been during the hurricane, and where are you located? What have these last few weeks been like for you?
Okay, so I'm in the northeastern part of the state, which up in this area, we just had a lot of rain. We had some flash flooding, and we had tornadoes, a couple of tornadoes that touched down. Some people lost power, but not everybody. And we are nowhere near the depth of the problem that's in the southeastern part of the state. That's where all the real devastation is. It's in the southeastern part of North Carolina.
Is there still flooding taking place? Are people still having to wade through water?
Yes, they are. I'm still getting reports of people having a lot of roads that still closed where people don't have access in and out of the areas where they live. We still have people like, we had a report this morning, there was an elderly lady that had 5 feet of water in her basement, and there's still a lot of water in the areas where the flooding took place, especially those areas that was immediately near the rivers that were cresting.
How did communities of color get impacted by the hurricane? I mean, we know from experience with Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, that unfortunately it's often low-income communities of color that are most deeply impacted, have fewest resources to evacuate and then to rebuild anything that might have been damaged.
That's right. And so that's where how we say that, therein lies the problem. Eastern North Carolina, we have deemed it the dumping grounds for North Carolina. Anything white people don't want in their backyards, you can find in Eastern North Carolina. So there's a lot of toxic waste sites here. And we are seeing the results of that in this flood, where we now have animal waste, human waste, coal ash, and Gen X that's been dumped into the waters, in the flood waters. And there is, so that means it's spreading all around the areas where people are. And so our concern now is that as a result of all this toxic waste that's been released through the flood waters, people are gonna be made sick. We've already began to get reports of people having upset stomachs and vomiting. And I had a report from one lady, one of our community partners, two days ago, that an elderly gentleman had gotten a cut. And he stepped in the water, and then he got an infection that taken to the hospital. He had to get his leg amputated, and he died right away.
Wow. So the waters are very deeply contaminated. Let's dig into that a little bit. So the two main sources of industrial pollution are hog waste sites. So North Carolina has a huge hog farming operation, among the largest in the country. And so where does all of that waste go? They are calling, I'm reading that they refer to them as hog waste lagoons. And then you have these unlined coal ash pits from coal mining operations that even, I understand that even when there have been coal mining operations that have been shut down, the waste, the coal ash, which is a byproduct of that, those operations, is still there. And before Hurricane Florence, it wasn't being put into properly lined pits. Is it fair to say that a lot of those operations were located in low-income communities, which is often, of course, the case?
Yes, that's definitely the case. And we have deemed it environmental racism because we feel like our communities have been targeted by these dirty industries as the avenue of least resistance, where people have the least amount of economic and political power to fight them off.
So now that these waters flooded these hog waste pits, coal ash pits, the water flooded. As the water receded, of course, it becomes deeply contaminated. And I understand it's contaminating the river. So we clearly have contaminated water closest to low-income communities. I don't know if you saw this photograph that NASA released from space showing these dark, dark black and brown colored water seeping into the ocean from parts of North Carolina. So it's so visible just to the eye. It's quite stunning.
Yes. And so as we always say, you know, environmental injustice is everybody's problem, because air and water does not stand still. And so just because you live miles or states away doesn't mean you can't be affected. If this water is traveling through tributaries, you know, and because of the rivers constantly moving and flowing, then it could go anywhere. And so it's everybody's concern. And I always say to people, if you flush your toilet, environmental injustice is your concern. If you put out trash, that environmental injustice is your concern. You know, if we go to the store shop and buying in bulk, and you got all this packaging that you're bringing home, you have to do it after you get home and unpack your packages. What do you do with that waste from that shopping? You know, so it makes it everybody's problem, because, you know, we had two waste treatment plants to spill over into these waters. And you know, that's human waste that we're talking about. And that comes from us flushing our toilets, and the waters go out and go into the waste treatment plant to be treated before the water is released back out again. And, you know, but when it, if it get disturbed before it goes through that process, you're talking about pure human waste. And that's what we're talking about that's been spilled into these waters, along with the coal ash, the animal waste that comes out of those open air lagoons. And I always tell people, we are not talking about that blue lagoon that Brooke Shields was hanging out in. We're talking about a cesspool full of nothing but feces and that they keep. North Carolina has 10 million pigs. We have more pigs than we do people in this state. And we are second in hog production to Iowa, but North Carolina has the highest density of animals. And they're more concentrated in North Carolina than they are anywhere else. And two of our partner communities have been ranked the hog capital of the world because Duplin County, which is in the southeastern part of the state, has 2.2 million pigs, more pigs than people in that county. As a matter of fact, the pigs equate to about 45 animals per person for the county. And their next door neighbor, Sampson County, has 2 million pigs, equating to about 32 pigs per person in the county.
Were you calling, was your organization, the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, calling attention to these problems even before the hurricane? Because, of course, this is an area prone to hurricanes, and these are environmental disasters in the you know, waiting to happen, as I mentioned, when you have these kinds of waste pits, whether it's hog waste or coal ash, and you have the potential for flooding from hurricanes, knowing that climate change is already here. This should have been a predictable outcome, right?
Right. and we've been talking about that. One of the things that we constantly talk about is the fact, how do you talk about climate change and not talk about environmental injustice? Because you're talking about vulnerable populations of people that's being made more vulnerable as this climate continues to rise. And these, our communities are like ticking time bombs, and Hurricane Florence has exposed that, you know, the fact that now you got all this stuff being dumped in the waters and nobody can stop it, nobody can control it. And I don't know if you all saw, Rolling Stone just did a really good article about Hurricane Florence, where they titled it
Hurricane Florence: When Climate Change Meets Bad Policy.
Yes.
So essentially, this is, it looks like what they're doing is connecting the fact that all of the deregulation that especially Republicans have been pushing for in terms of protecting the public from these kinds of industrial waste sites are now meeting the challenge of climate change, which also conservatives have been working to deny. So this is a man-made disaster.
That's right.
Naima, I'm wondering if you've looking forward, or rather looking back to how things transpired, what your assessment is of both the federal government and the state government's response during Florence. What kind of a grade would you give FEMA, state government, Governor Roy Cooper?
So, well, that's technically all that is still being determined. The governor has, you know, come out and spoken on behalf of an expedient recovery or assistance to the impacted communities. So that remains to be seen what our GOP does here. They'll be meeting next week to determine how much money is going to go towards this Florence recovery. So, you know, in if their behavior is in the past is anything indicative of what they might do now, we would probably have a very huge shortfall in terms of assistance for getting people back, you know, to normal living or living prior to the hurricane. So that remains to be seen. Now, the federal government has been in the areas, and from what I'm hearing, I haven't heard any huge complaints from anybody right now. But, you know, as time goes on, that's what really tells the story. The immediate responses have been pretty good so far.
Right. We understand hundreds of people had essentially been rescued. And also ordinary people helping one another. How have local industries been hit? This is an area already where, you know, as is the case in many states, people struggle with unemployment and we don't have very good jobs. But did Hurricane Florence impact local industries and jobs in any particular parts of the economy? And if so, how will those parts of the economy be built? Ideally, as a green economy.
Yeah, well, definitely in all of the flooded areas, people are, you know, temporarily out of work because workplaces, you know, all of our schools in those areas, most of the schools in those areas are still closed. People have not gone back to work. And until these waters recede and they're able to clean stuff up, it's probably going to be that way. It's difficult for people to get to work if they can't get through the waters, or and some people are even afraid to leave their homes. You know, now they do have some emergency unemployment available for hurricane people that was affected by the hurricane, which, you know, could be helpful to people if they can't, if they are unable to get back to work.
And as far as you know, what are the plans for cleanup? How does one clean up things like ash and hog waste and even human waste from the water?
Now, that's a good question. You probably need to be calling the state and ask them that question, because it's a whole, like I said, there's a whole lot of mess out there. I don't know what they're going to do to get it all cleaned up. but they have a huge problem on their hands of their own making too, as a matter of fact. So, you know, how they're gonna clean up remains to be seen, but we will be paying close attention to what they're doing. And we have our own team of people where we've put together a coalition called the Just Florence Eastern North Carolina Recovery. And we work together. We're getting supplies out to people, waters and foods and baby needs and cleaning kits, boots, gloves, masks. You know, we've been helping with deepers and tree removers and, you know, just trying to help people be all right, getting tarps to people that need them for their roofs, because a lot of people's roofs are now leaking. So getting tarps out to them so they can protect themselves a little bit better if any more rain comes. So we're doing everything we can as a coalition to service all of these impacted areas. We're going all over southeastern North Carolina, distributing supplies and assisting people in any way that we can.
Is there a place that people can financially donate to the work that you're doing?
Yes, you can do that by going to our Just Recovery ENC website, or you can go to www.en, as in Nancy, C as in Cat, E as in Evelyn, J as in Jump, en as in Nancy, .org.
And that's ncejn.org, and that stands for North Carolina Environmental Justice Network.
Correct. And you can donate there and just earmark it hurricane relief. And that way, all those any money's coming goes towards the coalition work and towards getting to people what they're needing.
Well, we'll post a link to that from our website. Naima, I want to wish you good luck. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And I'm sorry.
My guest has been Naima Muhammad, organizing co-director of the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. We've been discussing the aftermath of Hurricane Florence in North Carolina. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.